in the first class. There we concentrated on introducing qualitative models of different issues in security, security management. Qualitative means we are concerned with describing the different parameters and how they influence each other in some problem, in terms of just positive or negative polarities. Positive polarities being that the effect and the cause and the effect move in the same direction, both increase at the same time or decrease at the same time. Negative polarity means they move in the opposite direction. So if the cause increases, the effect decreases, and the other way around. So we introduce then causal loop diagrams. We express them using VenSim. And then a particular case of causal loop diagrams, which contains the problem in a nutshell, are the system archetypes. And we reviewed the different system archetypes. Then we had some exercises. And maybe we can start soon seeing if there are some particular questions relating to the exercises and the solutions. And then I would like to point to the examination. If you go to the tax folder here, then you see a folder which is the first examination project. Then I assume that all of you have seen that there is a description of the project to be done and to be submitted by Friday, 19 hours. To submit the project, you will have to go into the hunting folder, which is this one, and each of you is here, and then what you do is upload the file, which is going to be a report file. You don't need to add the VenSim files if you have the diagrams in your report. I would prefer if you use PDF files, but you can also submit Word files if you like. But I prefer PDFs. The other thing is, please don't forget to put your name in the report. Sometimes in the past, I have received reports that are anonymous. Okay? Any questions as to the project today? I can answer questions related to understanding the project. Of course, I cannot answer questions as to your solutions. So please don't send me emails or requests saying, look at this, is this right? Because it is an examination. And when it is an examination, you are supposed to do it by yourself. This said, it is okay if you students interact with each other and discuss issues exactly as you would do if you had a challenge in real life, you were working with a problem, then you will discuss with others. The point is that you yourself, in the end, write and sign from the report. You have to make your personal choice. Don't trust what others do. So you can talk to others, but you have yourself to do the report and do the model. Don't borrow diagrams from others. You have to do everything by yourself and write every word by yourself. And then it doesn't matter if you talk to others. Any questions? Okay, doesn't seem like questions. Good, then let's start with today's class. Here is a short overview of what we are going to do. We are going to start with a quantitative system dynamics. Remember, system dynamics is the name of modeling simulation discipline, which relies very much on the issues of feedback and understanding the relation between the feedback and how the system behaves. So, as you see in the context, it is an introduction to quantitative system dynamics. It is a discussion of how the causal loops, the feedback, the causal structure relates to how the system behaves over time. And then I will introduce two important kinds of variables called stocks and flows. And later we will also have stuff on time delays, which are very important. Then, as to the materials, as always, I provide you with a short introduction about what the class is this time. And this introduction, if you open the document, is this one. This is just for briefing you. It is not a lecture in the sense that I am going to read this or discuss that, but I will answer to questions. It describes the materials that we are using. It tells you what we are supposed to read. And there is a course on system dynamics. ISD is the abbreviation of system dynamic, applied to information security, which is actually a professional course that I have delivered for different companies in the past, including British Telecom, BP, British Petroleum Exploration, Statoil, and others. So it is for professionals. Not all in this course we will use, but the sections 3 to 4, 6 to 13, and 17 to 21 I will review. Again, which is very important, is that you are active and do models and exercises with VenSim. Then, as additional literature, I have already referred to other books. They are not absolutely necessary, because what you need, I give you in the lectures and the exercises. The most important thing is that you are active. Any questions to this? Okay. Then, if you open the course on System Dynamics Applied to Information Security, that's quite a big course that I normally have given in workshop for three whole days to different companies. The first part of the course objective still applies. You will understand what the so-called stocks and flows are. There are particular kinds of variables in the model, and how to create such models, focusing on examples from security. Then I would like you to understand and get well acquainted with VenSim as to how you choose algorithms to simulate, how you model time delays. In principle, also how you could share data with other applications, but this is a part that I am not going to do much. It will be more important in professional workshops with companies. All this is documented in VenSim and so on. So actually the most important things are these tools: choosing appropriate simulation algorithms and modeling with time delays, in addition of course to making the models. The next thing, the hexagons and impact diagrams, I will only very briefly tell you about. I will tell you more about as to how you verify, validate, and test system dynamic models. And as to the basic model structures that are referred here, I am not going to go into the detail. They are things apart from security: human resources, inventory, product capability, and product life cycle. They are less interesting for you. Again, I made the remark last time, the help system in VenSim has a modeling guide. And this modeling guide allows you to create hands-on different kind of models. They are not models related to security, but they are very good and very well explained in case you want to know more about the techniques, the technology of VenSim, how to use the different capabilities. Okay, with that, I jump now to the beginning of section 3. Section 1 and 2, the introduction and so on, we can skip. Of course, you are invited to read to the whole if you like. So let's jump directly into the introduction of levels and flows, or levels and rates, how they are called also. You will see there are two names for each thing. We will hear about stocks, alternatively levels, and flows, alternatively rates. So, first, a little bit of history. System dynamics was introduced by Jerry Forrester, who still lives and is close to be 100 years old. He studied control engineering and was a leading scientist in that field and also inventor. During the Second World War, he developed systems for the control of rockets. That's what in Norwegian is called reguleringsteknikk. In English is called control science, control engineering. And then he invented an early memory device for computers and became co-founder of computer production company, one of the earliest, shortly after the Second World War. And because of that, he was in the board of the company. And then he had to deal a lot with managers, which are social scientists, and he recognized that these guys were not used to thinking in terms of what systems happened over time. They had a very, very static thinking. And then he introduced ideas that he knew from control theory to social systems and to management, and basically that was the question of feedback, which we already introduced in qualitative terms in the first class, and the questions of using computers to simulate what happens over time, which is now what we are going to start doing from today. He developed a graphical notation that was first done on paper, and to support the simulation he created, or actually his students, because he became professor at MIT, his students developed a text-based programming language for simulation. It was called Dynamo. And at that time it ran on big computers. They were called mainframes. In the 80s, several companies starting developing systems for modeling and simulation with system dynamics that use the new graphical capabilities of laptops or personal computers, as they were called at that time. The first was the company Performance Systems that was based in New England, in the United States. And they developed a system that they called Stella for the Mac. Later they developed a more advanced version which they called iThink for the Mac. Then a Norwegian company, which I was co-founder for, PowerSim, in 1988 first developed a text-based system. Then in 1992 we developed the first system for their Windows-based systems. It was called PowerSim. And around the same time, Ventana Systems introduced VenSim, which was also had a graphical interface. I am no longer with the company PowerSim. It still exists. It is based in Bergen. I stepped out of the company something like 12 years ago. You may ask me why I don't suggest using PowerSim as a simulation tool, which still exists. Well, PowerSim is a very, very powerful system for simulation. The problem is it has a huge amount of details, so that it is more difficult to use and to learn than VenSim. VenSim is much simpler. So if I were to use PowerSim, I will have to spend many more hours in teaching you the language so that you could model, and you will get confused by the huge amount of options and diagrams and selections, all the kind of things that you can do. So I think it's much better to to use Venzin, which is more pedagogical, simpler. For about 30 years, system dynamics was only used by few professionals. It needed the development of graphical simulation languages like, I think, PowerSim and Venzin, which came around the second half of the 80s. And it needed also a popularization of that, and that was Peter Singhi, a professor at MIT and a colleague or a former student of Jay Forrester, who did it. He wrote a book, The Fifth Discipline, that had a huge success. And that was in 1989. And since then, the number of users of system dynamics increased. Also, many more universities started teaching system dynamics. In fact, in Norway, in Bergen, you have even a master's study and PhD studies in system dynamics. So now to the introduction of the variables that we use when we create graphical models to be simulated. The first concept that is important to understand is called level or stock. They are two names for the same thing. Stock is a pool, a container of something. I don't know why this is making so much noise. Sorry about that. Perhaps I put this here because every movement that I do creates noise. Okay, so when you are doing models, then you have to consider some quantities, and these quantities, they can grow or decrease by some processes, which is the next one, the so-called flows. And that could be some materials, it could be money, it could be people, it could be some other resources, like for instance the security of the systems, or even negative resources, like for instance the number of vulnerabilities in some system and so on. We represent this by a box that indicates that this is a container or a stock. And the level is in this container is simply the amount of that resource. So that's why we have two names for the same thing, the stock, which is the container, and the level, which is the amount that is in the container. Unfortunately, both terms are used. So if you read in books or articles or hear lectures, then people will indistinctly speak about stocks or levels, and they mean the same thing. Then, the flow. The flow is always a process, and it can be a process that increases what is in the stock or decreases what is in the stock. The other term that you have for the flow is the rate, which is, so to speak, the intensity of the flow, how big the flow is. If the rate is high, the flow is very high. If the rate is low, the flow is low. So again, we have two terms that mean the same thing. And because some people use flow, some people use rate, we have to know both terms. So levels and rates, or stock and flows, they are particular variables that we need in order to be able to simulate systems. Another variable that we have are auxiliaries. Auxiliaries, in principle, they are variables that depend on other variables. So they are used for calculation of some quantities. In some languages, I think in iThink, the auxiliary is called converter. Then some variables can have a constant value, they are then constants. In some languages, the symbol for the auxiliary, which is variables, and the constants, which are constant auxiliaries, so to speak, they are shown with different symbols. For instance, in PowerSim, they put for auxiliary a circle, and for a constant, a rectangle. However, in Venzin, you don't see the distinction in the name. Both the auxiliary and the constant look alike. We will still see that it is possible to recognize what is a variable that changes over time and what is a constant that doesn't change over time. I am going now to use these symbols in a moment. So at the moment, this is just the first presentation of these kind of variables that we use in graphical models. Now, as to the levels and the rates. Remember, the levels is also called stock and the rates are called flows. There is a metaphor for that. The level of some resource you can compare with the level of water in a bathtub. The bathtub will, by the way, be the stock, so to speak. And the rates correspond to the inflow of water to the bathtub or the outflow of the water to the bathtub. So you see here the level, how much there is of something, and two rates, one which is an inflow that is giving adding water to the bathtub so that level increases, and another rate or outflow that is taking water out of the bathtub so that the level will tend to decrease. So no matter whether you are thinking of physical quantities, which you can represent in principle by a metaphor of water, or virtual quantities, like for instance the security level in a system and so on, you can always think in terms of the metaphor of a bathtub, and that is increased by some inflow or some outflow. If you have questions, please raise your hand or raise your voice and then we can discuss that. Now, let's see some examples. In VenSim, we would represent the process whereby incidents are reported by an inflow or by a rate. Remember, flow and rate are the same, two names for the same thing, like this. Then an inventory of incidents that are pending to be processed, that will be represented by a level in a stock, and we use that box. And the outflow, which is the incident processes that decreases the number of incidents that still went for processing, will be an outflow like this. So forget for the time being about these curious things that look like clouds. They are clouds. Forget about them for the time being. And let's concentrate on what the process is. Incidents reported is a process. And it is a process that you will measure by the number of incidences reported per unit of time. The unit of time you choose in a convenient way. You would, of course, use a time unit that makes sense. So if things happen slowly and you need a week to notice big differences, then you use week as the time unit. But if things happen very rapidly and things change in an hour or even faster, then you will choose hours or minutes or whatever for the time units. So incidents reported, the inflow that changes the amount, the level of pending incidents in the pending incidents inventory, is a process that you measure in the number of incidents per unit of time. The pending incidents inventory is represented by some level, like the level in a bathtub, and you measure that by the number of incidents that you have there pending to be processed. And then the staff in the company will process these incidences, and that will be an outflow that will decrease the number of incidents still pending in the inventory. The incidents process will again be processed, will be a process, and you will again measure that as incidents per week. What you see here is that the units are in the rates or flows, as they are the same thing, always are the same units that you have in the level here per unit of time. And that's because the inflows is something measuring changes over time, whereas what you have in the level, what the level represents, is a quantity that is kind of you can count. Another example, let me go back. No, that's okay. So now, here is a little example as to what are levels and rates. So what you can do here is covering the units and then start thinking, what is the incidence inventory? Is it the level or a flow? And you could go through the whole thing and try to answer the question before you see the answer. So incidence inventory that you are counting, is this a level or a flow? Then it is a level. And what kind of units do you use for that? Well, incidents and so on. Incidents reported, it's obviously a flow. You measure that in incidents per time. And so on, you can continue with the others. The number of employees in organization, is this a level or a flow? It's a level. I hope you are not seeing the answer. The number of employees hired to the company, is this a level or a flow? Well, normally you will represent us as a flow because it is what you hire per unit of time. So that will be a flow. The population in some area, say in Jurvik, is this a level or a flow? It's a level. The attrition is a strange name. That is the staff leaving some company, and they can leave because they are fired, or they can leave because they want a different job, or they can leave because they are retired. So attrition is compounded outflow from employees. So what is income? Income is what you earn if you are employed, what you earn per month or per year. So that should be then a flow. Revenue is where the company earns per unit of time, so it should be a flow. Your debt, that is how much money the bank has given you at some moment of time, it should be a level. The assets, that is the values that the company has, so you will count the buildings that they own, the machines, whatever, so that should be a level. The cash is also a level, it's the money that it has. Cash flow should be a flow. Capacity, in terms of production capacity of a company, that is also something that you can count, so it should be a level. The interesting thing is what kind of units you can use for measuring the capacity. We can come back to that later. Now as to morale. The morale is something that depicts how much confidence, say, the staff have in a company or a student has regarding his or her capacity to do perform well. It is a soft variable, but it is a very important soft variable. So in models where you are modeling the ability of the staff to deal with something, say deal with security incidents or students to master the topic or whatever, you better have the morale, because the morale is very important, even if it is a quantity that is soft and you cannot give it a very exact value. If something is important, use the best value that you have, because not including this important quantity that is soft means you are still giving it a value. You're giving it the value zero. And that is much wronger than giving it some approximate value, even if it is uncertain. It's better to be approximately correct than exactly wrong. Okay? So morale is a level, because you can, in its principle, give it some value at the time. Vulnerable host in security. The number of hosts that can be attacked because they have vulnerability. You can count that, that should be a level. Hardened hosts, that are those levels that you have repaired and don't have vulnerabilities. That's also a level. And patching, that is the activity to repair or to make vulnerable hosts, hardened hosts, so it should be a flow. Okay? Good. So you will, when you are doing models, have to reflect on the question, when is a variable a level? And then there are some criteria to decide. A level is only changed by the flows or the rates, is the other name. So therefore, a level cannot simply change like that. Something must flow in or out, or both things, so that the level changes. The other thing that is important is that all the levels that you have in a system, they are represent the state of the system. So everything else in the system depends on what is in the levels. In that sense, we can say the levels are the memory of the system. And then if you make a snapshot of the system, that means stopping the time, you can't count what is in the level. If you look at the previous slide and consider anything, like for instance the number of vulnerable hosts, the number of hardened hosts, and so on. If you freeze the time, you can count exactly and say that much is vulnerable and that much is not. Whereas the flows, you cannot measure. If you go now to the this slide here, you can in principle say that much water is in the system. You can tell me what the level is. If you had here scales and can see how high it is and how big the bathtub is, then you can say it has that much water. But you cannot tell me how much water that is flowing in or flowing out if you have frozen the time. So these three questions, they give you a clear distinction as to what is a level. Very often, you just use the third criterion. You freeze the time, can you count it? Then it is a level. There are here some examples that you can review. An inventory of incidents never appears or disappears suddenly. Rather, it comes in through incidents reported or processed. Then, if you count the amount of incidents in your inventory, you can make decisions as to how many resources you need for dealing with them. If you stop the time, you can count the number of incidents in the inventory, but not how many incidents that will come in the next period of time. Okay, questions? As to flows, a flow, again, a rate is the alternative name for that. It's always a process, and it is always a process that adds to or subtract to from a level. So you can always connect the process in terms of such diagram of a flow. So what are these clouds that you see there? A cloud is also a level. So, but it is a level which you do not consider in your system. It is kind of the boundary of the system. It exists, but you are not interested in it. If you're not interested in where these incidents come from, well, actually, let me first take one other step, because this can be confusing. In this example here, something is wrong. This is wrong because the inflow of incidents cannot be a campaign to do reports. It should be like this. So this is a wrong diagram. You cannot put this. So you would have to put the incidents reported, and the reporting campaign will be some activity which will increase the motivation to report and will lead to incident reporters. So this will be a correct model and this will be an incorrect model. And now back to the clouds. The incidents reported, in principle, come from somewhere. But if you are not interested in having a description of where they come from in your system, if you boundary so that you keep that out, then a cloud will do. And similarly, the incident process. You could say, okay, I want to count the incident process. Then you put here a level. If you don't want to count, then you just have a cloud. So that's basically What you do. Later in Vensim, we will see how to create such models and how the clouds appears and so on and so on. Okay? Any questions to this? Then we continue. Now, why do we simulate? People sometimes say, oh, these models and so on, why should we have models? Well, the reason why we need models is because we always think in models. You never have reality in your head, you have models of reality. But when I ask you how these models behave, then you have problems. Look at this very, very simple, very, very simple exercise here. Where you are, vulnerabilities in software, they come because people make mistakes, they have, they make bugs. Bug is a jargon name for mistakes in the software. And Windows has millions of such bugs, and that's why, and many other problems as well, that's why vulnerabilities are continuously being disclosed. But when people are programming and writing code, they commit mistakes and they create vulnerabilities. Now, assume this very, very simple pattern here. Assume that two bugs are made at time zero, two more bugs at time one, two more bugs at time two, two more bugs at time three, then no bugs for the next 2 hours, and then one bug and so on. Assume that the number of vulnerabilities is originally zero. If I ask you without doing the calculations or without using some software to compute the number of vulnerabilities, most people cannot do that intuitively. You have to step down and think what is happening. And I am going to do that for you here. Just follow my mouse before I simulate. Originally, we have zero bugs. Then it says two bugs appear per unit of time. So after 1 hour, you would be at that point here where I am now, at point two. In the next hour, two more bugs will be produced, so you will be at four. In the next hour, two more, so you will be at eight. So you will have a straight line increasing from zero to eight for the first 3 hours. Then no bugs are coded, so that will stay at the level of eight until time five, and then one bugs is made, and then six. I will be here at six. Then it will stay at the level of six for the next 2 hours, and then it will commit increase by one and by one again to seven and to eight. So you have a straight line for zero to six, a horizontal line staying for the next 2 hours, and then it will increase by a straight line from six to eight over the next 2 hours. Let's simulate it. There you see it. But I had to reason that. It is not very intuitive. And you see the connection between the rate, the inflow, and the level is not at all intuitive. Our head is not able to immediately say it's going to be like this. And this is a very, very, very simple system. If you were simulating a complex system, there is no way that our head, our mental, our brain is able to simulate this. Here's another example, recruiting of hackers. Hackers are recruited first at the rate of one per unit of time, then at the rate of minus one per unit of time, meaning leaving. Those who were hackers are leaving. And then at an increasing rate that goes from zero to two per unit of time, accelerating, and then it stayed constant. So you want to simulate this starting from zero, then first you will have the 1 hour, one, then two, then you lose one, and you lose another one. So at time four, you should be down to zero. So you will have a straight line upwards and a straight line downwards. And then you have an acceleration. You are recruiting hackers at increasing speed. So there you will get a curve increasing in steepness. And you will have to calculate, in principle, you do that numerically, but the area of this triangle, seeing it has their base 2 and height 2, its area should be 2 times 2 divided by 2, so it should be 2. So it should increase from 0 to 2 in increasing acceleration, and then no more recruitment, it should stay constant. Let's simulate that. And there you can see that. Straight line upwards, straight line downwards, increasing acceleration up to 2, staying constant. Again, completely non-intuitive, still this is very, very simple maths. So that's the reason why we need tools like Benzene and why we need to program this in order to see the consequences of what we are doing. Simulation of models is highly non-intuitive. We can have very complex models in our minds, lot of relations, lot of things, but if I ask you what is going to happen over time, you are lost. Without a computer or some mathematical equations that you are able to solve, you cannot tell what is going to happen, even in very simple situations. Okay, now we will have a break in a few minutes. In the next hour, I will come back to feedback, go back to the issues of reinforcing feedback or balancing feedback, which you know from the first class. But now we have all the elements that we need in order to show what happens with reinforcing feedback and what happens when you have balancing feedback and what happens when you combine reinforcing with balancing feedback. We had some intuitive idea that reinforcing feedback means that something increases over time, or if it goes in the opposite direction, decreases over time, while balancing feedback will achieve some equilibrium or steady state state. But we didn't have the ability to do that numerically. By the end of the next chapter here about modeling common feedback structures, you will be able to do that using Benzene. And I will engage you doing that yourself. It is very important that you use Benzene. Do you have a laptop? Yes. That's very important. So for you, it's very important that you follow the lectures now with your computer and using Benzene, because you have to learn how to create the models, and you have to learn how to eliminate mistakes if you have mistakes. So with that, I close this first hour, and we have now a break. We will start exactly at 2:15 again.